We're doing the Chazonish. We're up to the fourth section of the second chapter. Hagmul hamkuveh lanu mehalot hadvarim al hasefer. What I'm hoping to achieve by putting all these thoughts down in a book, ki ba'alotenu al hagnut al hasefer. Because if we will honestly actually place these thoughts in a book, באים הדברים הלועטים ומטפחים על פנינו להכיר את הגנות של ביטחון מזויף. Then it will help us realize how problematic false ביטחון is. Why do I mention what is false ביטחון, says the Chazon Ish. I misread it. I read it as הגנות from the term הוגן, honest, and really he means הגנות, the derisiveness, nature of false bitachon. So he says, why do I bother going out against false bitachon? Because I hope that if I actually write it, then it will force us to recognize how wrong it is. I think that he's talking to himself. I'm not sure if he's talking to himself out of humility or he really is attesting to the idea that we all have an element of false bitachon within us and that he himself hopes that by addressing it in writing he will advance in uprooting it from himself. I'm not sure if he really means it when he says it about himself or he's writing that way out of humility. ואם אמנם שלילת הביטחון מחסור בנפש המושכלת, וכמעט שאין לו חלק בעיקרי היהדות, and although technically we would say that a lack of ביטחון is really a lack of intellect, and if you're smart enough then you should see everything he's written up until now, why it's logical to have אמונן ביטחון, and technically we would say that there's no room for it within Judaism, within the basic tenets of Judaism. But the Chazon Ish says what's even worse is false bitachon. This concept that we think we have bitachon in Hashem, we convince ourselves that, yeah, I'm connected with God and I believe, and then we're really kidding ourselves. וביות הזיוף שלילה מוחלטת, ואין לה זייפן מותר על המשולל, הרבה מן השרוריה וההרס בבוטח זייפני, אשר המשולל נקי מהם. He says, in fact, when something's a forgery, so technically, you don't have anything. But it's worse. Because if someone has nothing, he's okay. כי המשולל משולל מן הביטחון. If a person has no bitachon, so he has nothing. True. He doesn't have any bitachon. He has to deal with life in a lonely path, because he's alone. He doesn't feel like God's with him. והזייפני משולל מביטחון ומחויב בזיוף. He says, but if you're a fake, so then you not only don't have real bitachon, but you got to keep faking that you do. So it's worse. He says, you think that a fake bitachon is no worse than no bitachon. He says, it is worse than no bitachon. Bitachon is that confidence that God could make things right. Emunah is the recognition when, in our day-to-day life, that God is present in the world. And bitachon is when things seem to be terribly bad or potentially terribly bad. And we tend to get very uptight and worried. So then if you can hold on to that original emunah and say, no, God could really make things different now, that's bitachon. So he says it's very hard to attain because when we're faced with real threats, the threats seem very potent, very real, very possible. And the idea of emunah, suddenly he's saying, yeah, God could make it all better, that seems very distant. He says, right, that's very hard. You develop your emunah. And then you, when the test comes, the question is, does it stand up to the test? That's bitachon. So he says, then you have a danger that people speak as though they have bitachon, but they don't. Why am I bothering to talk about it? Firstly, because then maybe we'll overcome it. He includes himself. Secondly, to recognize that a lack of bitachon, as problematic as it is, it's not as bad as fake bitachon. Because fake bitachon, you got to keep faking, and then you have a real problem. How do you fake it? You always talk about how God runs the world. For sure God runs the world. I'm not worried because God runs the world. You can't do anything to me because God runs the world. And I'm not even worried that you're conning me in this deal because God runs the world. And if I'm not meant to lose the money, you're not going to win me by conning me. You ever hear me people like that? You know. It's mind-boggling because I'm just coming now from a meeting with someone like that. I'm a mush now walking in here from a meeting with someone who spent the first time I met with him telling me about how God runs the world and nothing bad could happen to him, and tonight's meeting telling me how God runs the world and nothing bad could happen to him, and he's not worried because no one could con anyone, which is phenomenal because this afternoon I hired a worker to fix something for my parents, and by mistake, the worker went to this guy's house instead of my parents' house. Fixed the whole thing for this guy. This guy needed it worse than my parents. And then he calls me up, and I tell him, "Where are you?" And he says, I'm at the right house." And I say, "No, you didn't." So he spent like 2 hours fixing this other guy's thing. And then he's an old man. He got confused. He went to the wrong house. You know, so he's working on fixing it, and then. It's not funny. He hired a lot of workers, you know. He works for 2 hours. And then at the end of the 2 hours, you know, I said, you know, "I'm very sorry." He went and fixed the thing for my parents. So then he calls up the first guy and he says, "You know, I fixed this for you." So the first guy says, "Who are you?" Right? doesn't know who he is. And he's right. So the first guy says, "Why should I pay you? You didn't talk to me. What'd you do come into my house and fix things for me?" So, the tenant let him in. It was this person was renting out there. So the guy knocks on the door. He says, "I'm here to fix this." So the tenant lets him in. He goes in, he sits there, works for 2 hours, fixes it, and then leaves and calls me up and says, "Come pay me." And I wait. So he calls up the landlord. Now, his landlord is this guy who always lectures me about how you have to have bitachon. He calls up the landlord and says, "Look, you needed this fixed. I fixed it for you. So out of honesty, shouldn't you pay me something for it?" So the landlord is like, "Why should I pay you?" So I met the landlord tonight and I said, "You needed that done. You know, in all honesty, you would have had to get that job done. Don't you think you should at least cover some of his costs, something?" I'm saying it's not like it was right. Unnecessary.
Right.
So yeah. I was just wondering, if you have all these lectures, are you not going to lose anything? Because God runs the world and everything's like perfect and there's nothing wrong could happen. So shouldn't you pay if you got a service? Like, you know, I'm saying that's a small. It's not, there are a lot of people who can talk
so
big.
So what do you say?
It's a long story. It didn't end with one sentence.
I think in American law, we'd have to pay no profit, but the free of market.
I wasn't talking about law.
In American law, you would specifically not have to pay anything.
Right. I didn't say legally he has to pay. Legally, he could say, you know, "I didn't ask you for this. I might have not wanted it." He could say, but ethically, if you know you benefited, and it's something you would have done anyways.
Right.
So you got to ask yourself if it's ethical not to pay, at least part of it, I'm saying. Okay, at any rate, I'm just saying, suddenly when it comes to money, where's all that faith? Where did it all go? Wait a second. If you're so confident, you wouldn't lose anything, so shouldn't you just be ethical? Okay, it's not that simple. So I'm saying these are things we encounter on a daily basis. People who lecture us and tell us how much faith we should have. Yes?
You've been defining
So the Chazanish stressed that. He said people mistakenly think that bitachon is the confidence that God will do what you'd like, and you have no such guarantee. I'll tell you a phenomenal thing I noticed today for the first time. Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. Right? So Nebuchadnezzar says everyone should bow down to my idol or they get thrown into the furnace. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah do not bow down. And then Nebuchadnezzar calls them up and says, "I'm going to give you one more chance, or I throw you into the furnace." And they say, "We're not bowing." And he says, who's the God that's going to save you from this furnace? And they say, we believe in a God who controls the heaven and the earth, and he can save us from the fire. And even if he doesn't, he still can save us from the fire. But we will not bow to your idol because we believe in the one God. And then Nebuchadnezzar has them thrown into the furnace, and we know the rest of the story. They walk away unscathed. So I always thought that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were very pious, and their merits saved them from the burning furnace. Along comes the Gemara in Sota, and I never noticed this before. It's a clear Gemara. The Gemara says, oh, have a Sota here? Yeah. So the Gemara says that when Tamar, Yehuda was intimate with Tamar. Tamar's pregnant, so Yehuda orders to have her executed, and Tamar sends Yehuda the signs and says, "Haker no, do you recognize whose it is? That's the one who impregnated me." And then it says that Yehuda confessed. Yehuda said, "Mimeni, yeah, it's from me." A heavenly voice came out and said, "Ata itzalta Tamar v'shnei banei minaur. You saved Tamar and her two sons from the fire. Chayecha, I swear by your life. Shani matzil, and here's the word I never noticed before. Bizchutcha gimel mibanecha minaur. I will save in your merit three of your sons from the fire." So I always knew the Gemara connected the story of Tamar with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, but I never noticed the word bizchutcha, in your merit. That means that they didn't have enough merits by doing it themselves. By saying, you know, we won't necessarily die. We're willing to risk our lives. We're not going to bow to your idol. That was not meritorious enough. They would have died. God could have saved them, but they didn't have enough merits by just saying they're willing to be thrown into the furnace. They needed the merits of Yehuda. So you have a good question. I'm scared of answering the question, but I'll tell you Gemara. Okay, I won't say that this is the answer, but I'll tell you Gemara. Okay, the Gemara says, if I'm not mistaken, in Sanhedrin. Pretty sure it's in Sanhedrin. If they would have tortured, nagdu literally means beaten, but it means tortured, then they would have bowed. So we don't hold that against them. I'm not sure a human being can withstand torture. I don't know. But the Gemara is telling us something there. I didn't say that's the answer. I'm just saying that is a Gemara. Back to the Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish says, "Hamshula lo yamshich acharav chanichim lechanchem b'torat habitachon." When a person has no bitachon, he isn't interested in telling everyone else, in educating everyone else about how to have faith, how to have bitachon. Ve'hazayfan, but when a person's a fake, then ma'amid talmidim chanichei hazayuf. He tries teaching everyone, and in fact, he's teaching them how to be a fake, just like himself. Scary things, the Chazon Ish is saying. If one has zero faith, they don't cause a chilul Hashem. But if someone's a fake, what happens? Remember, the Chazon Ish said, when suddenly someone opens up a competition against him, so then he goes out full force against him and all. Put up signs and he'll do anything in the book, all in the name of God against his friend. And then people look at it and say, what a fake. And then suddenly all of Bitachon looks fake. So the Zayfan, the fake, the counterfeit, when his shame becomes revealed, so then he's desecrating God's name. People say, look at him. He learned Musar, and how disgusting are his actions. How despicable are his different cunning ways. Look at the way he tries to outsmart the other guy and put the other guy down. And so the Chazon Ish says, that's why I'm taking time to talk about what is fake bitachon, because it's super relevant. It stands in our way. He speaks, so to speak, about himself, and it has a lot of casualties. It really is harmful. It's not. You can't say that nothing wrong. So I'm not yet there. It's only a fake bitachon. No, he says it really has harmful effects. So that's why, says the Chazon Ish, I've taken time to discuss fake bitachon, and we'll continue. He's midstream. He's still in the process of explaining his thought. Yes?
So the idea is not to actually necessarily say, you know, God will save me, or God will do X, Y, Z. God will have an intellectual understanding that God can't do anything, in that, including salvation or whatever, in whatever particular circumstance you're talking about. But there's like a difference between that, like, knowledge, okay, God could do X, versus expecting it.
Right.
So, like in the story that you're just talking about, did they expect to die? I mean, that would be like the normal course of circumstance, that even righteous people sometimes do.
Right.
So it seems like they were expecting to die.
Right. They expected it might happen.
And not even through their own merit, but through the merit of their great ancestor, Yehuda, then Yaakov, you know, they were saved. So it sounded like they did this expecting to die. So is that the normal level of bitachon? Is that the highest level? I'm not sure how we...
It's a high level.
Relate to that.
It's a high level of bitachon.
I don't mean like divorced from the scenario. The idea of like, I'm going to do the right thing and expect a negative outcome, but because it's the right thing, it's like...
That's bitachon. I'm going to do what's right. It's very hard. You don't know what the outcome will be, but try it. You're taking it to an offshoot, which he didn't overtly say, but yes, it really stems from the same place. This is part of the concept which he hasn't yet discussed, the idea of how much do I feel like I control my destiny? So how hard am I going to fight? I remember this came up a lot when I was dating. So I always wondered, how hard do I have to fight to get the right date? So let's take an example. Someone had an idea. They offered me to date the girl. I said, I'm interested. And the girl was busy. Okay? So I went on to the next offer. And after I agreed to the next offer, I go out on the first date. It seems like, not too exciting. I get a phone call. The other girl's free. Now I'm standing there saying, wait a second. Do I end up with this girl? I already dated her date one. Didn't seem too great, but I'm not sure. Ordinarily, I would go out on a second date. So do I end it now?
Yeah.
But the other girls... Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's easy to say. On paper, everyone seems great. Oh, so maybe I should date two at a time. And maybe I should date three, because then there'll be another one that sounds great.
So I'm
saying there's no end to it. So that's where you start racking your brain. You say, wait a second, how far do I have to go? So we had a guy here in the Mahon who's dating three girls a day.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's cool? I'd offer him to set him up, and he'd say, I don't know if I dated her yet.
He
said, let me go check my book. You know, he had books of girls.
Huh? File of books, you know.
So at the end of the year, after Pesach, we have a whole series on dating. If you're curious, so it's all online. It's all online. You could listen. What?
Did he get married yet?
Surprisingly enough, he did. I was very surprised. I really didn't have my bets on him for ever getting married. Hundreds of girls later, if not thousands of girls later, yeah, he got married.
Well, that many Jewish girls?
I guess, yeah. Yes?
Think about this. You know, we like relate to God in so many different ways. One of those ways is like as a father to, as our father, and we're children. And in that circumstance, when you say, like, oh, you know, I've bitachon that God could do X, but probably won't, and I'm going to try and do the right thing anyway, is in certain scenarios it's insulting. Like imagine, faith that my father could, make me, good food today, a good dinner or something, but I expect that it's probably going to taste gross and, be healthy or whatever, and I walk into dinner with a frown and, but I'm going to eat there, and I'm going to eat kosher and attend the family dinner or something. In certain scenarios, it's very, it's not appropriate to be, expecting something like that. I don't know if that was kind of part and parcel with everything is like that. You should always have a simcha. Oh, God's gonna save me or whatever. In any circumstance, or that's only the things that are really, really true. Or I don't know how to see
this. So I'd rather give you a longer answer. I give a short answer, but if you remind me, then. Next Thursday night, we can try to discuss it at length. The short answer is that when we say we don't know what the outcome is going to be, part of what we're saying is that we have a limited perspective on what's really good. So we know what we'd like, and we know that we're going to daven and try to make that happen. But at the same time, we're going to abide by the rules of the omniscient one who gave them. And that needs to be developed further, because I'm saying something in a general sense that really needs to be a little bit more quantified. There's more to be discussed. Remind me on Thursday night, Bezat Shem.